go forward, right?
Good morning. I'm going to be filling in for Dr. Jeff Becerra. He had a last-minute schedule change, so I've come down to give the talk. I'm going to be talking today about some of our soil moisture measurements from the Oklahoma Mesonet, looking at our spatial and temporal variability. Other co-authors include the director of the Mesonet, Dr. Chris Fiebrick, and Dr. Oshner as well, at one of our OSU colleagues. I wanted to start by talking a little bit. I'm actually a meteorologist by trade and wanted to look at why Oklahoma is kind of a dynamic region, why it's important to measure some of the soil moisture there. What we have here are two climatology maps, one of precipitation in the upper left, one of temperature in the lower right. You'll see that Oklahoma kind of intersects where we have these orthogonal gradients of temperature and precipitation. So you can see we get more moist in the east, drier in the west, and then we also have the vertical gradient or north-south gradient of temperatures where we get warmer in the south and cooler in the north. So we have these cool, moist areas, we have these warm, dry areas, so we kind of have a mix of all types of a dynamic climate. And not only spatially, but also temporally. This is a climate graph of our annual temperature history, and this goes back before the 1900s. You can see kind of on a decadal scale, we get warm periods and cool periods, and it oscillates kind of back and forth. So not only do we have this spatial difference, but also temporal. And also, since we talked about temperature, looking at precipitation, we also have kind of a variability from a temporal scale going from wet and dry periods. You can see the Dust Bowl era that was famous back in the day. And we are currently kind of been going from kind of a wet, warm, moist area and maybe headed towards a dry one, especially with if you start to factor in 2011, which was pretty dry. Koster et al. Back in 2004 kind of showed this graphic in their work. This is in areas across the globe where land-atmosphere coupling is very strong. So again, talking about, we've got the soil science here, and again, myself as a meteorology, we're very interested in seeing where this coupling occurs. Where does the soils, the soil moisture, soil temperatures impact the atmosphere, and where does the atmosphere then come back and impact the soils? So these are areas of very strong coupling, and you can see the central part of the United States kind of right in our kind of our wheelhouse, going from Mexico up all the way up into Canada, shows some very strong couplings. Some of you may have heard of the Mesonet. For those that don't, I'll just give a quick, brief overview. It is a weather and climate network covering the state of Oklahoma, so a little over 181,000 square kilometers. It was commissioned in 1994. It was planned earlier. This was kind of the result of a large flood in Tulsa in 1984. It is a joint project between Oklahoma State and OU. So while we may not agree on our football, we can agree to work together on this network as getting it put together. Oklahoma State kind of more focuses on the soils and the agriculture side, and OU focuses a little bit more on the meteorological aspects. We collect data every 5 minutes, and then within 5 minutes of that data collection, the data is sent back, quality assured, and is made publicly available to the users through websites. We do have subsurface measurements, soil temperature, soil moisture, and we have about 4 billion observations currently archived and growing. And there's a small map. You can see we got very well coverage across the entire state of Oklahoma. This is a typical tower here. We've got 120 of these stations. We've got about 3,300 sensors, about 250 computers all linked together to get this data, about 700,000 observations that we ingest every day. We do have two-way communication, so if we need to talk to a site, collect past data, if we need to update a program, or if maybe there's an event going through, instead we want to do 5 minute, we want to do 1 minute data, we can talk back and forth. Additionally, we collect about 63,000, or produce about 63,000 products each day from maps, data files, so on and so forth. That's kind of the overview of the entire network, but we want to focus on the soil moisture part of it. And the sensors installed at the Oklahoma Mesonet are the Campbell Scientific 229L. It's a heat dissipation sensor. It's about the size of about a AA battery, if you will. How this particular sensor works, for those that aren't familiar, we just take a temperature, We apply about a 21-second heat pulse, and then we take another temperature, and the amount of water in the soil, or kind of the relative wetness as that heat dissipates, is how we can determine the soil moisture there. If you add in some of the soil texture analysis, we can empirically estimate soil water content, but just want to make clear we don't measure soil water content. This is actually a matrix potential sensor, not a water content sensor. Originally, it started out as an experimental project, but it has become a core measurement of the mesonet. And at most of our sites, I think it's up to about 108, we've got measurements of 5, 25, and 60 centimeters. I just want to reiterate again that it does not directly measure water content, but we can empirically derive that product through a series of formulas. Since water content is important, the colleagues up at OSU have been working for the past months or longer, revisiting these formulas and revisiting these coefficients to give kind of a much stronger, accurate representation of water content. Network started about 1996, so we have about 15 years of data, and we also have a lot of metadata, including soil texture, vegetation, etc., for each of our sites. I wanted to look at some of the results. This was about a week ago. We had a very strong rainfall in Oklahoma, right up the I-35 corridor here. Had upwards of almost 5 inches of rain. This is coming after our long drought. Somebody had thrown up the drought monitor maps, and you could see that the entire summer we've been in a drought. So heavy rain right after very dry conditions. This is kind of a map that we get with the result of our soil moisture network. The values that you're seeing here, you may not have heard of this. Fractional water index is very straightforward. One is as moist as our sensor can measure. Zero is as dry. It's just a linear scale amongst that. So it's not physically telling you how much water or anything like that. It just gives you kind of a relative wetness here. So you can see after the very heavy rains, this is at about 10 inches, 25 centimeters. You get a very strong moistening. Upwards of 1, so these values of 1 indicate that as moist as the sensor can measure. If we compare this to just 1 week earlier, this is the amount that it has changed. So we went from, let's say in central Oklahoma, we raised 0.8, so we went from almost as dry as the sensor could measure to as wet as the sensor can measure, and this is just kind of a 1 week window. But again, this is only at 10 centimeters. If we look down a little deeper, we could see that moisture did not reach all the way down, and only in certain areas did we actually get a moistening. So despite having heavy amounts of rain, there was a lot of that was runoff, so we only had kind of a near-surface moistening. Some work that I actually did back in 2004, what I did is I had taken all of the soil moisture data from all of our sites across the state and kind of made a climatology, if you will, or kind of a normals. If you ask somebody what the temperature in San Antonio in August is, you know, they may tell you the high is maybe 95, 100 degrees, something like that. But if you ask them what the soil moisture is, they may say dry, but not really have a numeric response to that. So that's what we wanted to kind of do. And in doing so, we were able to notice that like temperature seasons, soil moisture does go through seasons. And we actually have these four seasons that we go through. In the wintertime, we have this moist plateau, and this is a time when there's not much rainfall, but there's nothing kind of removing that rainfall. The vegetation is dormant at this time. We get low sun angles. As we move into the spring, everything starts to grow, so it starts to remove that soil moisture. We start to get higher sun angles. But we also have the summer or the spring rain, so we kind of have this battle. If you just focus on this red line, that's the near surface here. And then at around almost exactly June 15th, almost like clockwork, we get a ridge, which is a high-pressure system that sets in over the Central Plains, kind of cuts off that rainfall. But we continue to have the plants continue to grow, remove the moisture, so we get what we call an enhanced drying phase. And then in the late fall, right around now, we start to get the fall rains that come back. The plants begin to die out, and we get a recharge phase. This was all done back in 2004 based on just the theory of what was happening when we see these four phases. But I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. That was statewide, but we can look. Like I mentioned before, we have a very dynamic climate in Oklahoma. So if we look in the northeast section, which is kind of a cooler, more moist area, we do see the same four phases. They may not be in the same length of time, but we do see them, and you can see they're kind of more towards the moist end. If we compare that to the southwest part of the state, which is more hot and dry, again, you do see those four phases, again, in different scales, but a little more towards the dry end. Well, since that was done in 2004, we've added about 6 to 7 years worth more of data and started the Oklahoma Mesnet Applied Climatology Project. As meteorologists, we tend to think of climate in maybe 30-year terms, but if you remember those graphs that I showed you towards the beginning, we kind of have a decadal pattern that we see shift across Oklahoma. So after about 10 years, we can start to kind of do an applied climatology, and for the true meteorologist, I'll use climatology in air quotes there. But we've updated this, and this continues to update every year. And this is the data that goes through 2010, and we can still see a very similar pattern, the four phases as well. But in addition, we didn't just look at soil moisture. We averaged every single variable in the mesonet. So what we're able to do is maybe take a look at parts of the water balance. Kind of can measure a little bit of three of the four variables in that water balance. We can get the precipitation coming in. You can kind of think of the soil moisture maybe as a little bit of storage. And then we also can do potential evapotranspiration as some of the output. The only one we don't measure is runoff. But looking at these three of these four, and putting these four phases back on, we can go from the theory-based back over towards actual what is happening. So again, we talked about this phase one, high soil moisture, we get the low rains of the winter, and fairly dormant vegetation. The green is potential evapotranspiration. Then in the spring, we get these spring rains, that's the blue here. The potential evaporation continues to go up as we get the higher sun angles and more vegetation. And then in the phase three, the enhanced drying, you can see the precipitation begins to cut off. It decreases, but we continue to get this higher potential evapotranspiration. And then in the fall, as the plants begin to die off, the lower evapotranspiration, and we get the fall rains return. Another application that we've used this for is some of our drought applications. September of 2000 was what we call a flash drought. It happened quite quickly. And by looking at these spatial plots, this one is actually a deviation from normal. So if you take what you would expect to have in September and deviate out what the current conditions are, you could see during this particular drought, you had these fractional water indexes that were almost half the scale, if not more, in the dry end, and this is already a point that's fairly dry. So this was another application. As I had mentioned before, Tyson and Beth are in the process of taking soil samples and across every mesonet site, update our soils information and use some new methodologies to estimate our soil water content. So Beth, I believe, has a post here. I'm not sure if it's still up or not. I'm not sure if she said to take it down, but it's poster 117-20 by Bethany Scott. If you want some more information on how we are updating those estimates of our volumetric water content. And just want to finish by, you know, there's lots of people involved in something like that, so just our faculty, staff, funding sponsors, and all.
Questions, take questions. Brand.
Yes, sir.
The fractional water index?
Sure. Before the site or the sensors are put out into the field, they're completely dried using desiccant to get a dry endpoint of the sensor, and then they're submerged in distilled water for a couple days to get a wet endpoint, because every sensor is going to be slightly different, the ceramic matrix, air bubbles, and so on and so forth. So we'll get those dry and those wet endpoints. And then if out in the field it ever gets more moist or more dry, we will go change those endpoints and reprocess the data. So it's just literally a linear response between those endpoints.
So it's really a water potential indicator more so than a water content?
The sensor itself is a matrix potential sensor, yes. The fractional water index, again, doesn't really tell you physically anything other than just a general wetness. There's no physical value there.